doing much of anything effective.
And Yusuf, we have 30 seconds. You're the director of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. At this moment when U.S.-Israeli ties are so low, what happens next for activism here in the U.S.?
Well, I think there's really only one answer to that question, and that is, in every way possible, the costs of occupation to the Israeli state have to increase. For many years, they have decreased, and it's become very easy for Israel to consider a future.
We're going to have to leave it there,
occupation.
Yusuf. We thank you so much for being with us, Yusuf Manier, Dr. Hatim Kanana, and Lisa Goldman. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today, we'll talk about atomic war.
Tune in Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. for The Melting Pot, featuring DJs, producers, and electronic artists from around the globe. Win tickets and stay up on events each and every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on The Melting Pot, right here at 90.7 FM KBOO.
It takes all of us to keep KBOO strong. KBOO is your radio station. Did you know that you can give gifts of stock to KBOO? We are able to quickly turn these donations into support for the important daily work of KBOO. How do you do this? Call 503-231-8032, extension 201, or email monica at kboo.org for information on how to make a stock gift. Thank you for supporting KBOO Community Radio.
I'm gonna preach you all a sermon about old man Adam. No, I don't mean the Adam in the Bible, Adam. And I don't mean the Adam that Mother Eve made it, but I mean the thing that science liberated. Now, Mr. Einstein, he said he's scared, and brother, if Mr. Einstein's scared, I'm scared. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Alamogordo, Albuquerque. You know, life used to be such a simple joy. Why, the cyclotron was just a super toy. Folks got born, they'd work and marry, and Adam was a word in the dictionary. Then it happened. The science boys from every clime, they all pitched in with overtime. Before you knowed it, the job was done. They'd hitched up the power of the gall-darn sun. Splitting atoms while the diplomats was splitting hairs. Down with all these foreign-born atoms. Time and we extinguish every darned atom that can't speak English. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Alamogordo, Albuquerque. But you know, the Adams International, in spite of hysteria, flourishes in Utah and in Siberia. Whether you're red, white, black, or brown, the question's this when you boil it down, to be or not to be. William Shakespeare. Now the answer to it all is in military datum, like who gets there first is with the mostest atoms. People of the world must decide their fate. They gotta stick together or disintegrate. We hold this truth be self-evident that all men may be cremated equal. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Alamogordo, Albuquerque. Stop the world, brother. I'm getting off. Well, if you're scared of an H-bomb, here's what you better do. Get all the people in the world with you. Get them all together and let out a yell, or the first thing you know, they're gonna blow this world plumb to Hiroshima, Nagasaki. Nagasaki, Alamogordo, Bokki. Yes, it's up to the people, 'cause the atom don't care. You can't fence him in, he's just like air. He don't give a darn about politics or who got who in whichever fix. He just wants to sit around, have his nucleus bombarded by neutrons. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Alamogordo, Bikini, New York, London, Moscow too, Shanghai, Paris, Lordy, up the flu. You can choose between the Brotherhood of Man and Smithereens. Yes, we can have peace in the world, or we're gonna have the world in pieces.
You know, it's weird. First of all, speaking of weird, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. We are listener-supported radio. Pardon me, I think I have a cold. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe ain't here. This is Joe. I want to hear from you. I am very, very concerned that we are heading once again toward a highly likely nuclear war. And I'm going to outline some of the reasons why I think that's true. And I'm going to suggest to you that you really have to play a role in preventing that from happening. I'm assuming that many of you have children, or your children have children, or yourself are young enough to want to keep living. And this is really, really a return to the era of terror. And I do want to talk about that. And I want to hear your ideas. 231-8187. And if you think I'm just full of it, that's cool too. I really, really do want to have a conversation about the hydrogen bomb, the atomic bomb, and all the other big bombs that are being built and already exist. Thousands of them, in fact, exist in Russia and in the United States. The nuclear club, which is the hydrogen nuclear club, we know includes Russia, Britain, China, France, United States. They're the declared hydrogen bomb possessors. But in addition, we have reason to believe that Israel has hydrogen bombs, and if not hydrogen bombs, certainly nuclear weapons. We also know that North Korea has nuclear weapons. In fact, a guy named Khan went all over in the East, in Asia, and showed people how to build such weapons. So we know they exist, and we know they're there, and we've in fact had explosions in India and Pakistan of nuclear weapons. Now, there's two kinds of weapons we're talking about here. A common atomic bomb, the kind we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which, by the way, I will argue were absolutely unnecessary and had to do with the politics of demonstrating to the then Soviet Union that we had such a weapon and that we could and would use it. And that is a very important thing to consider. First, certainly the second bomb, the one at Nagasaki, was a crime, I think, against humanity, because at that point, the Japanese were trying desperately to figure out how to get their very foolish imperial government together to surrender. Now, there are people who say, oh, yeah, but it saved thousands and thousands of lives because the Japanese would have fought to the last person. Well, maybe, maybe not, but I don't think so. Japan had been burned out by conventional weapons, particularly by incendiary devices. Japan, the cities in Japan were largely made out of wood and paper. So when you set them afire, they burned good. I am very concerned now because suddenly I'm realizing that what is at stake is huge. And in fact, the Republican Party, not all Republicans, but the Republican Party as it currently is constituted, is actually a war party and is actually advocating essentially a war against Iran. This war is supposed to be a preemptive strike. It is supported, that idea is supported by the current Israeli government, the Netanyahu government. Netanyahu, if you recall, came to the United States Congress at the invitation of the leadership of the Republican Party in Congress and lectured the United States government, and particularly the government of President Obama, on the dangers of Iran having nuclear devices, and has made known its commitment to bomb with nuclear weapons Iran if they actually develop such a device. Iran, for its part, denies the intention of building a bomb, but is developing enough nuclear fuel to conceivably have such a bomb. Now, having a bomb, having it operational, being able to deliver it, having more than one bomb, being willing to commit national suicide in the name of whatever, that's a long ways away. But this is a real threat, a really perceived threat. When you put into that mix a right-wing Israeli government that essentially believes in using any means necessary to secure a safe Israeli state, and is willing to slaughter hundreds of people, thousands of people, to secure that, mowing the grass, I believe it's called. When you put that together with a Netanyahu, who essentially is the tail that seems to wag the dog of the Republican Party in the United States. Then, on top of that, just to throw into the brew even more weirdness and craziness, we see a rise in various countries of the old anti-Semitic lies, the Protocols of Zion, the notion of the international Jewish conspiracy. All of that crap is still going on and still being pushed. I remember my shock 20 years ago to discover that a bestseller in Japan was the infamous Protocols of Zion, which is a fraudulent document put together to encourage anti-Semitism in Europe many, many years ago. So all this is going on. And most of us really think that the crisis of a nuclear war is over. And I don't think it's true. I think, in fact, there is a war party very strong in the United States, and a similar organizational structure within Russia that consider the possibility of the use of nuclear weapons. We do know that Putin sent a message to the United States very clearly that if we intervened in Ukraine, the possibility of a nuclear holocaust would ensue. We also know that there was very nearly a nuclear war when the Soviet Union, what is now Russia, attempted to establish intermediate ballistic missiles with nuclear warheads in Cuba. This is undeniable as well. We know that the U.S. very quietly managed to trade obsolete nuclear weapons on tipping rockets in Turkey, so there could be an apparent quid pro quo to save Khrushchev's face. We came very close to nuclear war then. There have been other incidents. The Russians do not have the satellite abilities that we do. They have lots of satellites now, but at one point, it was very much believed by the Russian military command that nuclear war was imminent and that Americans had launched missiles against the Soviet Union. Fortunately, calmer heads prevailed, and there was a conversation, and it was realized that what the Russians were seeing with their radar was not a nuclear attack from the United States. The United States has the ability with its satellites to see the launch long before the Soviets, or Russians now, could see it. And that's a crucial strategic advantage. But a lot of this depends on mutually not assured destruction, but mutual trust. And trust is really hard to come by these days. Plus, there are all these other states, Pakistan and India, always at each other's throats with nuclear weapons. North Korea, and God knows where the leadership there is on the use of nuclear weapons. So far, they've only tested them and made threats. Vile threats, but threats. And I am not sure but that the Israelis will not use nuclear weapons against Iran if they perceive that Iran is close to, or in fact has developed, a nuclear weapon. There are two kinds of weapons here of concern. There's the traditional atomic bomb, the kind that was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, now more perfected, now smaller, and now more powerful. Then there's the hydrogen bomb. Hydrogen bomb is a thermonuclear device. What that means is that hydrogen is heated under pressure to the same temperature of an exploding atomic bomb, which is the core of the device. The result is a thermonuclear explosion, which can be many, 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 many times more powerful than a conventional nuclear weapon. It is a terror weapon. It is a world destroyer. And I think part of the reason why everyone backed away from nuclear war was mutually assured destruction. But beyond that, scientific analysis of nuclear winter, that is the incredible dust that would be created by such a disaster. Now, I'm not sure that rational heads are prevailing anywhere. And I want to hear from you. Am I just being paranoid? Am I crazy? Or are we at the brink of something really nasty? You know, this is what set me off on this actually was today's New York Times, an article in the science section showing a picture of the Bikini explosion of the first thermonuclear device. And there's a memoir by a guy who was involved in the creation of the bomb, who tells in his book very bluntly some of the so-called secrets of building a hydrogen bomb. Now, a lot of that material is already out there. So the government's complaints against him, I think, are irrelevant. I think people who plan to make such devices are pretty close to being able to do it anytime they want. There's no real tactical advantage, by the way. Then, on top of that, this week from the Physicians for Social Responsibility, we looked at and they mentioned the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists talking about the doomsday clock, so-called, that the Bulletin had developed, and the fact that there is this incredible stockpile of nuclear weapons. You know, when weapons sit, the theoreticians of war just really want to use them. And right now, we have this craziness going on from the right in this country. And there is a real sense in the hardline Zionist community that nuclear war is one of the legitimate tactics to protect the state of Israel. All of this, plus the fact that the United States, under the current regime, and particularly with the pressure from the Republicans, are totally uncritical, I think, of Israel and its behaviors. The murderous war in Gaza was just, you know, tolerated even by the most liberal people in this country who are Zionist. And that was very disturbing. So here I am thinking, boom, you know, maybe I'm just paranoid, and I want you to maybe call me up and say, relax, it's okay, it's not going to happen, wiser heads will prevail. The fact that these weapons exist in stockpiles doesn't mean that they'll fall into the wrong hands, one possibility, or that they'll be used by nation states, another possibility. So give me a call, tell me I'm all right, or tell me, well, you're right to be frightened. 231-8187 is the number to call. It's a topic that isn't real popular now. Years ago, it was the common thread of fear when the effort to stop the creation of the Polaris system of the nuclear submarines of the United States was going on, and the Committee for Nonviolent Action was doing civil disobedience, and when the Catholic movement against nuclear war, the radical movement, which really owes its tradition to the Catholic worker movement, when those were active, we all were very aware of these issues. And I think most of us who were then young people were really, really anti-war, and in fact, anti-nuclear war. I should mention another fact. According to the French, when they were starting to lose control of Vietnam, the United States offered them nuclear weapons. Two weapons, I believe, were offered directly to the French to rescue Dien Bien Phu, which was this hardened base that was deeply threatened by howitzers that had been dragged up the hills by the National Liberation Front troops, by the troops of the Vietnamese, and particularly North Vietnamese. So I want to hear from you. Am I just crazy? Is this something that we ought to be concerned about? Is this something we can do anything about? 231-8187. Who do we have? Ian.
Yeah.
Hi, man.
Yeah, I don't usually agree with your point of view on things, but I do this morning, so I thank you for bringing up this issue. It's an important one. I would just take exception to the claim that Republicans are the war party. I think that it's a little more complicated than that. I think that there are Democrats, too, who are really not not conscious of the risk of nuclear war. And conversely, that there have been, of course, there have been many Republicans, even someone like Reagan was a person who was definitely working against. So I think what we should do is try to find our, talk to this to our friends and do those small actions that we don't think are going to make a difference, but that do make a difference in the long run. Just, you know, the small demonstrations and acts of civil disobedience and talking about it at church, talking about it with your union partner and so on and so on.
No, I agree with you. As to whether or not I'm demonizing the Republican Party, it's not the Republican Party in the traditional sense that I'm talking about. I'm talking about the rise of a kind of know-nothing fundamentalist force that has seized control of a lot of the Republican Party. And I think that there have been, in fact, Reagan, for all my criticisms of him, was, as you suggest, very aware of this kind of danger.
Yeah, and also historically that sort of middle of the road intellectuals have been the ones who got us into the problem and the ones who kept us there. It's strange, but you know it wasn't right wing crazies who got us into Vietnam. It was Johnson and McNamara and all those people. So anyway,
no, I think your point's good. Actually, if I were going to name a point at which we got into Vietnam, by the way, it would be under the Democrats, and it would be earlier than that. But I see your point.
Yeah. Okay. Keep it up. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. Thank you for the call. I think this is really a serious issue, and I think it transcends party politics. I tend to be more upset with what's happened to the Republican Party, kind of because it's so compelling. And because we have this whole new wave of members of Congress who are dependent on the loyal support of a kind of know-nothing politics that has seized control of a large part of the Republican Party. But I don't want to exclude, in fact, the responsibility of the current Democratic Party in all of this. In fact, our two-party system is both corrupt and dangerously willing to use war as a policy device. And I really do want to hear from you. And I really think that it would be really cool if somebody said, it's not going to happen because people are so smart, you know, too smart for that. But I don't see that. I really do believe that what is being talked about by organizations like the Physicians for Social Responsibility and the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists really have an understanding that transcends the two-party dichotomy. It's really important to understand something about weapon systems. When you have them, the temptation to use them in any crisis becomes very compelling. So far, wise heads have prevailed, and perhaps they always will. But as I see the enormous energy being put into the very difficult situations in the Middle East, particularly for the survival of Israel, I become very, very frightened. And I also see that the Russian government under its current leadership is very adventurous. Now, I want to mention something about that. People don't seem to understand that at the collapse of the Soviet Union, the negotiations, the verbal negotiations between the West and the former Soviet Union basically were that there would be a set of neutralized states, buffer states, between the former Soviet states, most of them the Eastern European countries, and NATO. That ended, And now all of the countries that were going to be buffer states are actually militarized, and militarized with bases that include nuclear weaponry. That meant for the Russians that in their desire to reclaim or regain the status they had prior to the collapse of the Soviet Union, that when a decision was made to reclaim parts of what had been Russia in the Ukraine, that would become a touch point, a potential point for a nuclear war. Fortunately, that has not happened. Potentially, that is always there. So we have a Middle East where a nuclear war could break out. We have a rivalry or anger between the Pakistanis and the Indians where another nuclear war could happen. We have a government I don't even understand but seems quite crazy in North Korea, that is a nuclear power now. And all of these countries can potentially develop hydrogen weapons, thermonuclear devices. Thermonuclear weapons are so much more powerful than the old nuclear weapons. And the scale is so huge. So I'm worried. And I really want to hear from you. I'd love to hear good things that are happening. I'd love to hear you're sharing your concerns with us here on KBOO. 231-8187. BJ.
Yeah. Well, you're right on, and I don't call in much anymore because I'm dealing with nuclear radiation. I mean, I worked at Bechtel Industries, and I did not know when I was working in little piecework until I asked someone there. I said, "What is this thing we're making here?" "Oh, it's an A-bomb." And I am sick now and dying, and now I realize that the mistake was made way back by not telling people what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's why this is going on since 1960. Mm-hmm. This is going on way, way long time, and I don't understand why. Our government, the U.S. government, I suppose, is mine because I'm born here and I believe in it. But I think this is one of the reasons groups like ISIS and huge armies are against us. I mean, they're not huge, but they're significant. And we didn't make any headway in Iraq and all those places because when you're in the army, which I was, you get the whole view. You get little pieces. And one of the problems is even the generals don't know. I used to deliver top secret stuff on Cuba to the base in Port Benning where it was done in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I would take all the, we thermofaxed all the photographs of the missiles from Russia, mm-hmm. and the Soviet Union on the big ship. They were freighters and they were coming to Cuba. That's what was the alarm, was the satellite, actually U-2 was photographing them.
Yeah.
And then the continuation of this on and on without any review, without any understanding, why are we doing this, to destroy the world? That's where I want to leave it. Are we doing this to destroy the world? Is the United States really the evil empire? Why are we doing this? I love you, but I can't love it alone. Everybody has to join this movement for peace and stop this nuclear holocaust. Okay?
Thank you for the call, and I agree with you. Thank you for the call. I want to mention, I mean, since this has come up, the Columbia River is very much a river of nuclear waste. Nuclear waste leaks out of the tanks at Hanford, which was a place that made weapons. We now know that nuclear fuel and nuclear devices, including power plants, are deadly. We have Fukushima in Japan, which is constantly leaking nuclear poisoned water into the Pacific Ocean. I know many people who now are fearful about eating fish out of the Pacific. I don't think they're unreasonable in their fear. I don't know that it's gotten that bad that soon, but that doesn't mean that it's, because I don't know, it doesn't mean that it isn't so. So already we have evidence of the deadliness of what we have done. And we were the initiators, but in all likelihood, had we not been, other countries, particularly the then Soviet Union, would have developed these weapons. Once the science is known, and it was known, it wasn't just a secret of the United States, by the way, once that science is understood, once the ability to make a nuclear weapon was available, it was virtually inevitable, given human societies and given political ambition and defensiveness and so on, that such weapons would appear. Now the question is, what is to be done about it? The fact of the matter is that we have a huge military-industrial complex, much of which benefits directly from the manufacturing of and badly maintaining of those nuclear weapons. You know, we had a chance when the Soviet Union collapsed to really disarm and get rid of all 15,000 nuclear weapons in both camps. That didn't happen. The numbers were cut down. A lot of weapons that were under-guarded, particularly in parts of the former Soviet Empire, were disabled or disassembled. But, boy, there's a lot of nuclear fuel hanging out there. And I want to hear from you. Nuclear war? Am I crazy? 231-8187. Joanne.
Yes, is the draft, using the draft in these times obsolete? And also one more question. What about drones and these bombs? And well, anyway, people think I'm crazy, but, you know, they're wrong. Bye.
Okay, thanks, Joan. As to the question, I don't think drones are a good device to deliver nuclear weapons, although there are smaller nuclear weapons now. But I don't think that's a concern. I think that there is, however, a strong camp in almost every country that has a vested interest in armaments. And part of that armament nowadays, given the technologies available, are nuclear weapons. One of the things to understand about nuclear weapons is they are very, very efficient. They're cheap. Once you've figured out the technology, they're relatively cheap to build. They're easy to put. They're small enough now to be put into the head of a rocket. Rockets are much cheaper than large bombers. It just all makes sense. We have a fleet, as does Russia, of nuclear-armed submarines. They're virtually undetectable, and they can launch at a moment's notice. And it's very, very uncertain that nations have a built-in systems to make sure that the launch is not warranted. I mean, it's really a scary situation in that respect. I want to hear from you. I want to try to understand and have you understand why there really is no great peace movement at this time in American history. I mean, that's part of the question here. Here we are at KBOO. We are the progressive radio station. We deal with a lot of really important issues, but I'm beginning to think that we are not paying enough attention to the development of the capacity and the intention of potential use of nuclear weapons. 231-8187. Tim, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to call you to let you know that... did you hear me?
Yeah.
To let you know that I think you're right on, ma'am.
Thank you.
I support the dismantling of the state of Israel, and I would like to see a one-state solution with equal access to rights and privileges, no matter who you what you believe in. I think that's the only way it's going to happen. That will last.
Okay, great. I don't. This is not, I'm not focusing on the question of Israel-Palestine, but I do think that at this point, since there isn't apparently going to be a two-state solution, a one-state solution has to be the solution.
Yeah, I think so. And how that ties in with nuclear, I believe Israel is pushing us for a confrontation against Iran, and from there it could escalate any direction. That's how the nuclear part ties in. I think we should start cutting, give Israel an ultimatum to truly commit to a just, peaceful settlement for all, or we start cutting their aid, say 20% a year.
Hmm, that's interesting.
And nothing.
Okay,
and
well,
we
thank
you. Start supporting. Yeah. We should look at Israel as the new South Africa and support a worldwide movement similar to what brought down the apartheid regime.
Well, I want to thank you for the call, and I appreciate the sentiment. I think that at this point, you know, the Netanyahu government, we have to make a distinction, I think, between the people of Israel and the people of Palestine and their leaders. And I
exactly.
think that, you know, and I think that the current leadership of Israel, which uses terror and fear and war to maintain its power, is very scary. And the fact that Netanyahu is invited to the United States to give us a lecture about the dangers of Iran and its potential for nuclear weapons, when in fact Israel has such weapons, very disturbing, very disturbing.
Well, like you were talking about the war machine, you know, that's direct appeal to the war machine in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Gear us up for one where they can get rid of Obama and get a real patriot in there.
Listen, I want to thank you for the call.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Bye-bye. Okay. Bye-bye. 231-8187. We're talking about my personal fear, and I think a lot of your fears, about the resurgence of the idea of nuclear war, of the legitimacy of it, and of the potential to use it. And I have to say, I'm old enough to remember very strongly the anti-bomb movements that came out of the horrors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and then the development of the hydrogen bomb in the Pacific. And the fact that these weapons were on a hair trigger. I think that several of our governments, East and West, have helped to reduce the possibility of an accidental triggering of nuclear war. But that doesn't mean it couldn't happen. It doesn't mean that it couldn't happen among the many states that now are believed to, or in fact we know, have nuclear weapons, and some of which may even have thermonuclear weapons, that is, hydrogen bombs. This is something that I had, you know, kind of put to the back of my mind until fairly recently. But the more I look at the material from the scientific community, the more I think about the tendency of nations to use weapons once they've developed them, the more I realize that the tensions between Russia and the United States are very high, and that the United States and its allies, NATO, essentially violated an agreement that had been made when the Soviet Union collapsed. And also, the aggression, let's not forget this, the aggression of the Putin regime, which is a totalitarian regime in Russia. These are very difficult situations. We also know that Israel has nuclear bombs. Some reports argue that they were willingly, that is, allowed to be taken, not developed there, but allowed to be taken from United States stockpiles. And some of those weapons are believed to be hydrogen bombs. This is a very scary situation. Meanwhile, there's a rise in general anti-Semitism going on in response to the behavior of the state of Israel. All of this, plus the development of nuclear weapons in places like Pakistan and India, just lead me to think, you know, what could go wrong, may go wrong, what may go wrong, will go wrong. And boy, I just don't think the people in charge of all of this are adequately responsible, concerned, or humane. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Michael, hey, you're on the air, man.
Okay, good morning.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're talking about nuclear war, and the biggest threat we have to us about nuclear war right now is Iran. If Iran develops nuclear weapons, they may not be deterrable. I said this last week, and you guys poo-pooed me, but I want to say this again. Ayatollah Khomeini, the guy who founded that regime in Iran,
yeah,
he said, what I'm here to do is spread Islam, and if Iran has to burn in the process of spreading Islam, that's okay with me. Now, how do you deter somebody like that?
Yeah, well, he's dead.
He's dead, yeah. With Khomeini, the guy that's running it now, is basically the same guy. That regime, the ideology of it, hasn't changed a bit.
Well, I don't think that's quite true. I think it's much more complicated than that. I think there's a real strong peace movement, a peace party, or parties, within the context of Iran.
In Iran, there's a peace party?
Within the context of Iran, yeah. Not a party like a political party, but a great deal of concern and interest in finding an accommodation on this issue. I also don't know.
I don't know why you think that.
Well, because I read that, and I read it in a number of different sources. None of them specifically pro-Iranian. I think your view is very much colored by your own politics. Is that fair to say?
Well, it's probably fair to say about everybody.
Well, okay, we can agree to that then.
Yeah, but okay, all right, but you know, they're developing what they say is just a peaceful nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
They're also developing ICBMs, which are useless unless you have nukes to put on top of them. Why would they be developing ICBMs?
Where did you have the information about ICBMs? That's interesting.
What, that Iran is developing ICBMs?
Yeah.
Well, like you just said, I read it all over the place. Look it up. Type in Iran and ICBM to Google, and you'll find more than enough stuff to tell you about their missile development program and how right now they have, I believe I read, they have ICBMs that can reach Europe. What are you going to put on top of one of those things? If you just put, like, you know, as much high explosive as it can carry, you might as well not bother, because their ICBMs aren't powerful enough to hit anything smaller than a city. So, you know, you randomly drop a couple of hundred pounds of high explosive on a city. You know, there's no point in developing an ICBM.
So your argument is, since they are developing these weapons, they will probably want to use them.
No. My point is that given the philosophy expressed by Khomeini,
yeah,
you know, I mean, Russia had weapons like that, and they put nukes on top of them. And you said earlier, just now, if countries develop weapons, then they use them. Well, you know, we've had nukes since 45, and we only use them in Japan. Russia's had nukes since, I don't know, 48 or something like that, and they never used them. And Israel has had nukes since maybe sometime in the mid-60s, and they never used them. So that's not even true.
Well,
you know, you got to be able to deter your enemy if the balance of
first
know,
of all, yeah. Let me unwrap a little of this. Looking in Jane's, which is, you know, the authoritative source for the sort of thing, they say that there is no Iranian ICBM. Now, it may be they're wrong, but I think it's important that we deconstruct all of our assumptions about this. Don't you?
What does Jane say, that they don't have an operational one, or that they aren't testing them?
That they don't have operational ICBMs.
Yeah, right. They don't have operational ones, but they don't have an operational nuclear weapon either. But they are.
Well, they don't even have enough fuel at this point to build such a weapon.
What, to build an ICBM?
No, to build a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, but they keep building more centrifuges. The received wisdom seems to be that with the equipment they have, it would take them about a year to make enough.
No. Yeah. Actually, that is the claim. That is the claim of the Netanyahu regime. I don't believe that's true. I think there's plenty of evidence that it would take them much longer than that. And their motives in this case are not clear. I think we're assuming, absolutely assuming, that their intention is to build such a weapon to make what? War on Israel? Which
well,
is,
you know. Given that Iran is basically swimming in oil, they don't actually need a nuclear power program. Why are they putting all this effort into building a nuclear fuel program if they don't need nuclear fuel?
Well, right now, remember, the ability of Iran to sell oil is limited by sanctions, ironically.
There's no chance that they can power their country so totally on nuclear power. I mean, that's
no.
You know, and they're building these centrifuges where? Under mountains, because they're hoping that they can save them from being bombed by building them under mountains.
So you,
I mean,
well,
the whole thing is a military program, it seems.
So your argument is that we must assume that their intention is to build nuclear weapons because they are building centrifuges that produce high-quality fuel. Is that fair to say?
They're producing centrifuges that are capable of going past what you need for fuel and produce the, I think it's 90-something percent enrichment that you need for a nuclear weapon.
I think the centrifuges they have right now can only produce 20%. But that's, I think your argument makes most sense if you argue that their potential using centrifuges would create enough fuel to build a nuclear weapon. And there we get into intention, and we get into a whole number of struggles that are going on right now in that whole region. And we get into the role of Israel, and we get into the role of the United States in the Middle East. And it becomes a very complex and snarly mess. But I think your assumption is that the bad guy, the only bad guy in all of this, is Iran. And I think that's kind of naive.
You know, when I look at what Iran is doing all over the Middle East, I don't see any reason to assume anything other than
ironically, Iran is now our partner in fighting ISIS.
Well, you know, when you run your strategy incompetently enough, as Obama has done, all kinds of bad things can happen, and that's one of them.
Okay.
You know, I mean, right now, he has no choice. Who's he going to fight ISIS with? He doesn't want to fight them himself. The Iraqi Sunnis, which we had put together into a reasonably decent fighting force, collapsed when he stupidly pulled all of the troops out of Iraq, and now all he's got left going for him is Iran, which, you know, he's stuck that way.
Unwrapping all of that would take quite a while, but I appreciate your presenting it, and I think it's something we need to discuss. But let me just say, because it's really important to understand, that beginning with our first invasion, and certainly with our second invasion of Iraq, we set ourselves up for this situation. Now, to blame Obama for pulling out when the American public opinion and the Congress, the Republican Congress, demanded that pullout seems a little disingenuous.
The Congress did not demand a complete pullout. The Congress would have been fine if he had established a status of forces agreement with Iraq, and that could have been established. He just didn't want to, and he didn't do it.
Okay.
What he wanted to do was pull all the troops out, because he didn't realize, and, you know, I'm not making excuses for Bush. Bush did major incompetent stuff, too, but... Mm-hmm. You know, then towards the end, he had it kind of retrieved, and then Obama threw that away. He threw away Petraeus.
Well, let me throw before we part.
Okay.
Let me just throw one question to you. Do you think we're closer to nuclear war or further away from nuclear war than we were, say, 10 years ago?
I think that the closer Iran gets to having a nuke, the closer we are to a nuclear war, because unlike most countries, I mean, India, and especially Pakistan, one of the craziest countries on the planet other than North Korea, they have nukes and they haven't used them. So there's a kind of a natural inclination not to use them once you have them, it seems to me, judging by what happened with Pakistan.
But that isn't true of Iran, you say?
But I don't think that's true of Iran, because Iran is basically the fundamentalist Islamist ideology that, you know, it's the Shiite version of what we see with ISIS, but thank God ISIS isn't in a position and isn't going to be in a position probably to create nuclear weapons, but Iran is.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Thanks
sure.
for the call.
Bye.
All right. Bye bye. 231-8187. Who is it? Sunny.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for bringing this up. And first off, I'd like to say, Joanne, you are not crazy. You are not crazy, and there are lots of us out here in Radio Land that look forward to what you have to say, and we know you are not crazy, so we're never going to buy that.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I've never directly said it, but I welcome Joanne's calls.
No, you never have said that, not you. No, and lots of people are saying that. No, we enjoy and we appreciate Joanne putting in her word, and she oftentimes qualifies it with, people think I'm crazy. Well, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. And then the last thing I'm going to say real quickly is, you know, for a long time, video games were pushing the war thing, which they still do, the war theme.
Actually, you're making an important point there. We're training our young people, you know, to be fighters.
We're not even giving them hardly any economy except war and drugs. Then the next thing was the people were wearing the death's head all over them, the skull, children's clothes with skulls. Well, you know, I guess there were a few Jews that made it to Israel from Germany. There were probably more Jews who made it to Israel from Germany post their genocide than American Indians who've made it. This is a death cult country. If you look back at the history from the beginning, you'll see an awful lot of heavy-duty death squads and all sorts of stuff and biological genocide. And we are war perpetrators. We are terrorizers. And, you know, right now Putin is saying, oh, God bless the NSA, the hypocrisy of this country when we're spying on everybody continually. We put neo-Nazis in power right next door to him, and then we act like we're peacemakers and liberators. The hypocrisy is all going to come home to roost. And now Americans sit around and think, oh, my God, ISIS has got this stuff, and they really hate us. Well, partly because a lot of ISIS was al-Qaeda, and they had them imprisoned in Iraq. And it was on the news the other day that when the war ended over there in Iraq, they literally opened up the prisons and they let them go. And now you've got ISIS, because when people don't connect to love and productive activity, and they're seeking power, and their egos are hungry, and their souls are chipped. They've got cracks in them, if they have souls. Then if they can't do something productive like building bonds, B-O-N-D-S, and then they build bombs and destructiveness, and it's just a soul sickness. And if you can't look around America and see the soul sickness that eradicated our original people, how we were chased up into the hills by good citizens that they chased every one of us down, and terrorized us, and they terrorize us still, then, you know, get acquainted with yourselves and find out what we're really doing, because we know, and the world knows. The world knows about us, but America doesn't know, because America's under a dark shroud of chosen ignorance. It chooses to be ignorance, but you know what? On top of it, it doesn't choose, and it isn't really even what we do. It's what they do, and they're stinking, and they're rank. That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you for the call. Much of what you said, I agree with. I'm having a little trouble with the start of it, where you were comparing the number of Jewish survivors of the concentration camps and of the death camps to the survival of Native Americans. I don't like those kinds of comparisons in general, because I think they're unfair, because we're talking about human lives and the sacredness thereof, but also because I think it encourages a certain kind of dismissiveness about the Holocaust. I don't think we should ever dismiss the Holocaust. I think we really need to understand that man's inhumanity to man, in the case of the destruction of Native peoples in this continent and in South America, but also the destruction of humans, 6 million or more in Europe, cannot be dismissed and cannot be trivialized with any kind of comparison. All of it's bad, all of it's evil, all of it's intolerable, and all of it has serious, serious consequences. Anyway, I do appreciate the call. 231-8187, and we're talking about nuclear wars. Who do we have? I'm sorry. Noah, like in the Bible.
Hey,
man.
All right, so I just have two fairly brief things to say. I'm not really sure what we can do to actually prevent some kind of war, some kind of really, really bad war. I think it's fair to say that the actual influence of one voter is a little difficult to calculate, and it's pretty small. But I think that there's one thing we can do to definitely guarantee war, and that is to assume that countries like Iran or like Pakistan are going to use their weapons if they get them, and that their only goal is to get these weapons, and that their goal is to destroy us, and so on. That's a really good way to encourage the same kind of thing that you're so aggressive against.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a kind of a rule of war, which is you always estimate the potential of an enemy, not their intention, because you can't know their intention. But I think that we have no real reason, real logical reason, to assume that Iran is a special case that's more dangerous than anyone else, particularly since they really don't have nuclear weapons and they really don't have delivery systems that are effective. The only country in the Middle East that has nuclear weapons is Israel, and we make an estimation that they would never use them, yet Netanyahu makes nuclear threats. Anyway, I appreciate your call, and I think your points are really interesting and good.
And it's also worth mentioning that, you know, if you actually could speak to the average Iranian citizen, they might have some fairly different social views and probably some different religious views, but peace is a really appealing concept to most people.
Yeah, and I think it's really important. Americans have a very stereotypical idea about Islamic nations. The fact is that Iran is a very well-educated country, that people are fairly enlightened, and they have access to a lot of media. So, and in fact, they had an attempt at a more liberal government, which was crushed by the authorities there, what was that, 2-3 years ago. So, you know, things are going on that indicate that there's hope in that context. My fear, more than any other, is that Netanyahu really means it when he says he'll use a nuclear weapon if the Iranians, he believes, get close to the building of a nuclear weapon. Anyway, I really appreciate your call, and I really hope people will struggle hard and individually and collectively to recognize this danger and to move against it. And now I have to do some business. I have to tell you that at 9 o'clock, it's Alternative Radio with David Basamian. Today we'll hear a talk by famed economist Richard Wolff, who I respect enormously, entitled Bailouts, Greece, and Capitalism. Our global financial system is getting quite clogged up at the top, and some rather ill consequences are implied for the rest of us. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, presenting cutting-edge news, views, interviews, and just plain horse sense with Chris Andre. At 10:15, we'll hear Flashpoints, investigative news journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. Today, we'll look at claims that Google is censoring web content for the U.S. government. I don't know anything about that, actually. Plus, there was yet another police killing. This is important. Another police killing in Texas. It's important not just because of what happened in Texas or elsewhere, but because police have shown themselves to be very resilient to any kind of reform. And I'm very concerned about that. And I will do a show in the next few months talking about the Portland Police Department, which will make me really popular, I'm sure, with the police. At 11, we'll hear Stage and Studio with host D. May Roberts. Today's guests are artistic director Terry Mathern and co-director Vanessa Vogel, with the veteran contemporary Portland dance group Conduit Dance, plus dancers and choreographer Shiva Yanka tells us about the Kathakali dance troupe. At 11:30, it's Art Focus with our guest Joseph Galavan, with our host Joseph Galavan. Today's guest is Jeffrey Thomas, owner of the new gallery, Jeffrey Thomas Fine Art. Thomas has been active in Portland art circles for quite some time. Anyway, all that and more on KBOO. And don't forget the music. We got the best music programming in the region. All right, 231-8187. We have time for a couple of calls. Who we got? Francis. How are you doing, Francis?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. I have a cold, so I'm not all right.
I have a little one, too. One thing, my mama used to have this on your own handwriting, a little quote from Peyton on her refrigerator that said, the only way one can endure man's humanity, inhumanity to man, is to try in one's own life to exemplify man's humanity to man.
Well, I think that's a good point.
Your future show sound like you will become very popular among the people. Maybe not the police, but the people will be happy.
Well, I believe that there's a significant... Actually, I believe there's a significant number of police who would like to see the agency be more fair and more effective.
Right, and I think they're just waiting for an opportunity to be able to speak out about it without fear of losing their jobs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the topic that you're on today, I think that the response that we got from Iran when those congressmen sent that letter, those 47 congressmen sent the letter to Iran.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
And the response that we got from them was very telling at how wise they really are and how intelligent people in Iran are.
Yeah, and how sophisticated they are, actually.
Right, and very sophisticated. They could see right through all of that, you know. So I'm hoping that greater minds will prevail, and that's something that we can only hope for because we don't know. But I don't understand why, considering what your caller just said about what he feels that Iran has the potential to do, why would anyone be opposed to negotiations with them?
Well, that's a good point. That is a very good point.
If that's what our goal is, to prevent nuclear war, then we should all be talking to each other. So I'm just hoping that those kind of minds that believe that we can sit down and negotiate and figure out a way to prevent war are the ones that I want running the country. Right now, I am concerned because of all of the corporate influence and the people who make the most money from war who are trying to run things.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, greater minds may prevail, and we do need to, at some point, as Sonny was saying, the United States needs to take the higher ground, because right now we aren't. And when people talk about what people are doing over there in the Middle East, they seem to forget we are over there. We are over there with our weapons. We are bombing their country, and somehow we are still in the right. I don't understand that thinking and how it gets there.
I'm going to try to get one more caller in. I don't know if I can, Francis, sure. But I thank you for your call. Do we have time for one? Oh, we're out of time. Wine. Okay, y'all, I hope you enjoyed the show. Well, not in a ha-ha fun way, but found it useful. Some of the insights presented by our various guests, callers, I thought were very interesting. I also have some hope. I think we need a peace movement. I really do. And I think it has to be huge, and it has to be dramatic, and it has to be powerful, and it has to be grassroots. And I hope you will form such a movement. Join many, many others, including me, in doing that. Thank you very much. Stay tuned for the best in public affairs and news here at KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. War against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, with host David Barsamian, we'll hear a talk by famed economist Richard Wolff entitled Bailouts, Greece, and Capitalism. Our global financial system is getting quite clogged up at the top, with some rather ill consequences for the rest of us. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with host Chris Andre. At 10:15, we'll hear Flashpoints, investigative news journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. Today, we'll look at claims that Google is censoring web